We started recording.
Okay.
I'm John Woo! Stamp. Welcome back to Deep Cut Books, everybody. Tonight with Jeff Circle and Claire Isenthal. Jeff, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing good. I'm doing something in PowerPoint.
he's multitasking. Claire, it is nice to finally get to hang out with you.
I know. Thanks for having me on, John and Jeff.
Claire is the best.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love you guys. It makes it easy. It makes it fun.
Yep. And we tried to do this a couple months ago. I'll tell you, this winter and spring was absolute a mess for me. My schedule was a disaster. Actually, my schedule still is a disaster. It just happened to work out this week.
And
you had your house torn up.
School sickness. God. My dog almost died. Totally agree. It's been a nightmare.
Yeah, that was horrible. I'm like, oh man,
thankfully
don't mess with the dog.
She's somehow hanging in there, but
my wife asked me, she's like, what happened to Claire's dog? And I'm like, I don't know. I don't want to ask him.
Yeah, I'm afraid to ask. Like, you don't want the answer to that question.
Like $1,000 later, guys, with the vet bills. That's like having a geriatric dog is no joke.
So everyone needs to go out and buy the Rising.
Yeah, please support my dog.
Yes, go to the dog's medical support fund.
Because we tried to get pet insurance for her and like we dropped it. She didn't qualify for anything because everything's a pre-existing condition. So anyway.
So funny story. I just dropped $1,400 on my dog. But it was for doggy boot camp. Like we sent her up to the other side of Georgia so that they would train her to do doggy etiquette and all that stuff, which has been worth every penny.
I bet. But
same thing with the pet insurance. So I got pet insurance on her and then we got two cats. And as we were driving up to go pick up MJ and I'm looking through the policy, like trying to see what we can claim, what we can't. And I can't do anything for the cats. Like the dog, she's personality wise, she's more prone to end up in the hospital than the cats. Cats are lazy. She's not. So I'm like sitting there. I'm like, do we really need pet insurance for a couple of cats? And me and the wife are talking about it. It's like, it just doesn't like, what are the chances? Right.
Yeah. Oh no. Oh, knock on wood. Oh God. Yeah. Well, words.
That's well, yeah. So I called the company. I'm like, hey, I'm going to cancel these two policies. And she's like, oh, that's cool. She sent me the form to fill it out. And when the form came through on email, like I'm about to fill it out. And I'm like, what if like, so the I'm like, and I go to Erica. I'm like, what? I mean, are we like tempting fate if we cancel this policy right now? It's like, those two emails are sitting in my inbox, still new, still unopened. And I just, I can't bring myself to do it.
I wouldn't do it. Cause it's just so pricey no matter what, especially with two. And my family, we have a lot of cats in my family. We're a big cat family too. And the vet bills can get so like, anything teeth related, anything like digestive system related. It's just, it's crazy.
I'm pushing send on that email. And what I'm getting from this conversation is that I can pawn my cat off on either one of you. And third, this is the perfect transition for our sponsor, petsinsurance.com. Not a sponsor yet.
But they should
think about it. Think about it.
We're going to monetize this sucker.
Maybe we should open our own pet insurance company.
We should, honestly. Obviously, there's a profit to be made from it. Like,
well, I mean, if think about it, we got a marketing expert and an intel guy and an investigator. If there's any team that's built for white collar crime, it's this one. A giant pet insurance Ponzi scheme, and then we all bail before the heat comes.
And it starts with someone taking my cat.
Okay. That's gonna be my short story. I'm gonna write it for
Jeff. You just stole my idea.
Claire writes the cat POV.
The wolf of PetSmart. Oh man. So
John, have you read the book?
No joke. I'm making my way through it now. I'm past the concert. The problem is I'm stuck on MR Forbes has got me stuck on this science fiction series he's writing that he's blending King Arthur in like spaceships. So it's like, I'm just like, so I'm splitting time.
Look between at you. Do you read multiple genres like that?
I read it.
John writes multiple genres. John is a multi-genre author.
I'm checking off those categories as we go. I'll find one that sticks and I'll become an adult someday. But no, I was, as I was, pulling, getting through it, like as, you know, the opening scene, all I could think of is, you remember that Paris, that attack on Paris in 2015?
Yeah.
With the guys attacked the Bataclan like concert hall.
Yes.
And all the video footage of that was some of the most stark stuff. Yeah. Like you could still see it. And it,
yeah.
And I mean, just the way Wolf and Flynn are very short scene, but it was like, man, I could just feel it.
Yeah.
I have a very big rule with hooks. If you don't get me in like first 10 to 15 pages, you're toast. And
I'm kind of the same way. I really am. Yeah. That's why I wrote the book just, Way Dead. Yeah.
Yep. I think that's kind of cinematic writing is what gets you keeping it in that choppy scenes, mm-hmm. and keeping having the conflict keep switching back and forth as much as it did.
Yeah.
My notes were, the Bataclan nightclub. And then I kept having that scene in my head from Cobra. Remember that motorcycle gang in Cobra, the like death cult?
I've never seen Cobra. No.
Sylvester Stallone's Cobra.
Yeah, he's got the match that he carries around in his mouth. No,
wait, what scene is that? I need to write that down.
It's the bad guy is like one of the coolest, creepiest bad guys ever, but it's like they're like a death cult chasing this actress. And Stallone, of course, being, what was his name? Cobretti, Marion Cobretti. Marion Cobretti up through California. It's a battle. Not his best work. I'm going to warn you right now.
What are you talking about?
I love that, like, that crazy death cult. I love the idea of a crazy death cult. That's my thing.
I know. I don't know. I mean, it's so funny whenever people who do read the book meet me and then they just like can't really reconcile that, like, I'm the type of person that like writes this kind of like dark content, because I'm not really a dark person, as you both know. But I don't know.
You're a donkey on the edge, Claire.
I feel like I've got the advantage, because when I did meet you, when we were talking, it was like, you know, your background in working for Google and stuff. And I see it. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, oh, you write what you know. Cause like my first three books are set in Charleston, following Charleston Police Department. And it was like, oh yeah, she is very comfortable in this scene. And then adding the freaks on top of it, just adding the violence on top of it was just fun.
Yeah.
That's the dark side.
John, it's funny because after seeing your panel at VoucherCon, I incorporated a lot of what you said into the second book, actually, as I was finishing.
Oh, good.
Up. Yeah. Because especially from somebody who doesn't have a lot of firsthand experience with violence, I'll never forget how I think, what was it? I'm going to butcher it. So this isn't going to be word for word what you said, but how you were like, if you don't land a punch and have swollen knuckles, it's not real, or like something along those lines.
Oh yeah. The superhero effect. Everybody just goes through, everybody fights nonstop and they don't even have a scratch on them. It's like,
yeah, exactly.
That was a lot of fun. Those panels are so much fun. But yeah, it's like
I learned so much.
Well, that's I try to do, and not to bag anybody, but it's like, if somebody's gonna get in a violent encounter, it's gonna be ugly. It's not pretty. It's not a dance. It's not kung fu. We're not doing a kata. It's like biting, tearing, and smashing people into the ground. And it's like, otherwise, it's not authentic, right?
You're right.
Ugh. Yeah. So
I finished the book right around the time that I went to a University of Toledo Rockets basketball game.
Oh no. And I get this a lot.
Yeah. And we kind of got swept up in I had friends who invited us to go to their box. And so you get a little behind the scenes back there. And I kept thinking about,
because
we're looking down and we can see everybody, and so naturally, you know, my cop brain is like, anything looks suspicious, anyone acting weird, is there any disturbances going on? And I kept thinking about this. I'm like, what would I do, you know? Where would I go? Do you just duck and cover? Do you hide? Do you try to lock the door? You know what? I felt the realism and it really struck home.
It captured it so well. Just and I don't know about you, man, but whenever you have to go through a metal detector, like concerts, and theme parks freak me out. Like
I agree.
Can't be in that kind of crowd because my mind just does the same thing. Like, where is he? Where's the bad guy? And what am I doing about it with no weapons at all?
Right.
Yeah. Not that I could do anything anyway. I'm not that good a shot. So.
So I went to the March Madness game in Indianapolis on Friday to watch Purdue play. And the same thing, you know, the first thing I think of was when people are like, oh yeah, 35,000 people are going to be there. I'm like, that sounds awful. And it was the same thing going through the metal detectors with my like clear purse and I'm pregnant. And I was like, how easy would it be to like fake a pregnancy? And you know what? Anyways, my mind, and I like was talking to my friends about it and they're like, who are you? Why does your mind work this way? And it's like, I'm a writer. That's why.
The Taliban's
right,
done that.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. No one's going to be like feeling up your pregnant belly. You know what I mean? Like
only TSA, only TSA is going to do that.
Yeah. Only even then.
There I am. Now I'm on a list. Thanks. I will say this really pissed my wife off back in the day, but this is pre-kids and I was a lot less mature than I am now. But I actually purposely snuck a folder into Disney once just to see if I could do it.
Stop it. Did you?
I had my backpack and you could still bring waters in. So it was water and then a nasty ratty t-shirt and I shoved it way down in the bottom. They didn't check. I was like, cool. I mean, it was like
a
3-inch folder.
Scary guy, kind of.
I just wanted to see if I could get away with it.
The second you open your mouth and you smile, you're not scary anymore. But like from a distance, you'd be like, that would be really terrifying. I'd be like, oh, alert on.
I'd be up in the control room looking down at the cameras like, pull the guy.
That guy. Oh, yeah. That guy right there. That guy.
Pull him. Extended check.
Why does he look so angry? he's had like 6 beers. He shouldn't be that angry.
Well, you know, the thing about like the Mossad or Airlines, they do the whole pre-counterintelligence investigation and for their airlines, and they do body analysis and behavior analysis from the gate. You know, even before you go through security, everything, anything suspicious. So they kind of have it down.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Fascinating.
Yeah. It's still just scary. And your author's note, I thought was interesting in that you're writing a violent, you know, thriller.
Yeah.
And you're just like, yeah, I don't like this. It's your, I mean, I'm grossly paraphrasing, but you're like, I don't like this. But this is the world we live in, and this is let's take a look at it, right? And it was just, I'm like, wow, that's an interesting take, you know? It's like starting Die Hard with like, yeah, you know, Nakatomi's not that bad a place. We have a daycare on the first floor. We're very sorry for what we're about to do to you.
It's so interesting because I felt that was really necessary because a majority of, I would say like, it's hard to kind of categorize who your readers are, but going off of the number of book clubs that I've joined, for example, that read primarily like women's fiction or heavily women's fiction or romance oriented, this is a pretty big deviation for them. Even if they like certain kind of thrillers, like Freda McFadden, for example, who just like churns those books out. But this still has like a lot more intensity in it than I think a lot of people are used to who don't read the genre like we do. So you know, a lot of people were the conversations in the book club discussions that I had, a lot of it was centered around the violence and the darkness, and whereas we don't kind of like shy away from that, it's something we're very used to, but it was something that I was interested in how often it came up. Like when I actually published the book, I never even thought of it as like a dark book. I just didn't. I don't know if that's because I know that sounds silly, but I don't know if it's because I wrote
an explosion on the cover. Come on.
Oh, I thought that was a Rorschach.
No, but I feel like I thought of it as so many other things, but dark just wasn't one of those adjectives that came to mind. And so many people after it came out were like, wow, it's so good, but it's so dark. And I was like, oh, really? And then I heard it enough that I was like, wow, I guess it really is dark. And so,
sort of.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you this, Claire, to kind of balance that out a little bit. And I don't know if anyone's asked you this, but your characters, Flynn and Wolf, how much did you go back and forth with them maybe going a little to the other side and maybe having a romantic engagement or some kind of Stockholm syndrome kind of situation. Cause I felt it was kind of going a little leaning that way. It's like, is she gonna fall for this guy? Or is he gonna finally break and, you know, be a real human? I mean, where did you struggle with, like, where am I going next with these guys?
Wow, that's a really good question, Jeff. I don't think I've been asked that before about if I was kind of caught in that. But,
well, you know what I mean with like the
Stockholm
syndrome thing?
Yes. Yeah. You know, I don't think I ever struggled with it because that was always the story in my mind.
Okay, so you never really saw them hooking up?
No, you're gonna have to see the second book.
Nice. Which brings me to my next thing. So The Rising Order was a hit, and so now we have a new one coming out called The New Order.
Now we have The New Order coming out. Should I share the release date with you?
Yes, you should.
Tell us about that.
Okay. Well, the timing did work out. I know our conversation got pushed quite a bit, quite a few weeks.
That's all right.
Perfect timing because now I can talk about this. But yes, the book is coming out April 29th. So really soon.
Wow. Oh, that's awesome.
I know. I'm excited. It'll be a great kind of like going into summer fun thriller. For those who have read The Rising Order, they know it ends on a pretty big cliffhanger. And, I didn't realize how controversial that was either, but apparently
don't make them mad. Don't make those readers mad.
I know. But, so it'll be, I'm excited to see there's quite a few twists pretty early on in the story. I'm excited for the readers to finish the character arc of both Flynn and Wolf. And I think that they'll be very locked into it. So I'm excited.
So what can you tell us about the story?
Yeah. Did you write it? Have you written both all the way through, or did you wrap up Rising Order and then be like, I should do this again? Or did you always have the arc planned out?
I always knew it was going to be at least two books. I actually was planning on it being three, and it was a pretty big decision for me to kind of scale it back to two. But at this point in time, by the time the second one comes out, it'll be like almost, it'll be pretty much a little under 10 years that I've been working on the series. And as a writer, that's such a long time to be with the same characters and the same story. And I personally was just really ready to do something different. And so anyway, there was an opportunity for me to end it how I did. And so I went that route. But I'd always known that the character arcs were going to continue in this trajectory. And the ending of the first book I knew had to happen the way it did in order for that trajectory to basically continue into the second book. And so I finished The Rising Order, and I was in the process of trying to find an agent. And then once I found an agent, going on submission, and throughout that whole time, I was working on The New Order and kind of like really trying to like wrap up as much of that as I could. And the last thing I'll say about it was an interesting time because I was right in the midst of writing The New Order when COVID happened, and I lived in Chicago at the time. And so to kind of be in like a dystopian Chicago that shut down, there's a lot of inspiration from that in this book. So it's kind of gives me chills.
Yeah. Well, that's that's one thing that, you know, I think about is like, I was on the beach during COVID. It was like, I never teleworked. I stayed at work the whole time. We never stopped working.
Yeah.
But I always wondered, like, yeah, what would it be like to stand in those, like, you know, massive skyscraper canyons and there's nobody around? Like, did you get to do that, or were you guys all locked down and stuff? Because I would have been sneaking out. I've been like, this is so cool.
You got to leave. The only time you could leave was to like walk. And so we did, you know, I had my son at the time was only a few months old, maybe 6 months old. And so that was our only way of getting out, is we would be like on the streets, some of the streets would be shut down. Like, people were always trying to like avoid each other. People were just like trying to get outside. But at the same time, like, all of the buildings were shut down. Everything was dark, like all the stores, all the restaurants. So there'd be certain times a day when I would like go on a walk or walk a dog by herself, and it was just empty. And
it's so creepy.
It was really creepy. The sounds, the feeling, the vibe. So a lot of that is very interwoven throughout this book. So, yeah.
Yeah. Now I was wondering, when you're talking about, you know, your book clubs and stuff, what kind of looks did you start getting from people after they read your first book? Like, did you start getting?
I got some really questionable looks where people were like, and that's where I said earlier, people find it really hard to reconcile my personality with this kind of book because it is so dark. But you know, when you're an author, I think you both know this really well. It's like, you're not writing this being like, oh, this is so dark. Like, you're writing the story and the characters as they come to you. At least as authentically as you can. And so it was never something I was like trying to filter when I wrote. And I guess,
yeah,
so it, like what you get is what you get, you know? And I'm glad that I didn't. Like, I'm glad that it, like, people's reaction kind of came out after. I wonder if I would have been influenced
to kind of, yeah, like having somebody that. Reading your dailies, you know, reading your daily cuts, but like, nah, nah, nah.
Yeah.
Wait for the crazy part.
Yeah, it's coming. Yep.
Oh man. So I was shifting gears a little bit. Mm-hmm. Your professional background is marketing, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So we were talking to Scott McCree about this a couple weeks ago, and it feels like nobody tells you, you write the book and it's going to sell itself, right? But with your background, did you have any idea coming into it that this, how did your marketing background set you up to be an author? Because I've read your Substack, and yeah, you make some really good, you have some great articles about that. But did you see any of that coming when you first started?
No, I didn't. That's a great question too. There was so much that you can't know until you know. I think that my marketing background, though, 100% set me up for success in pursuing the entrepreneurial, sorry if I butchered that word, side of this, which is so many authors just don't consider, period, point blank, because they're so focused on writing the story, perfecting the story, getting the story published. But you truly, if you want to be successful in book sales, you have to sell the book and sell yourself as a brand and build your brand as an author and build your readership. And so much of that is figuring out how to navigate the marketing side and the business side. And I totally underestimated that coming into it. And you know, I spoke with another artist. She actually does something different, the other day to kind of help advise her on her digital marketing kind of recently. And I was like, you know, well, okay, if she has a small budget, so she wants to be very pointed with how she was going about her marketing. And I was like, all right, well, you know, do you have a TikTok? Because there's so many social media platforms you can at least tap into and access and create content to for free, which, as we know, is very important in order to reach new people. And she was like, oh yeah, I don't even have a TikTok login. And I was like, oh honey, you know, like, you have to be willing to do some of this if you want to sell a lot of books. And so, it's been a learning curve the whole time, but it definitely helped me tremendously.
Yeah. So it was like, you're like the rest of us. You're like, I'm going to write this book, and then, yeah, it's like, oh shit, now I got to figure out how to sell it. But at least you do that for a job. So you're just like, okay, I'll apply this little box to here.
Yes. But it's still like learning an entirely new industry, you know, yeah, like, your background can help you. It can make you savvy and understanding how things work, but it's like selling books and selling your own product is so different than like the advertising initiatives I was working on for my clients. You know, it's just a totally different.
It's so hard to get used to. It's so hard to get used to. Yeah.
We know you made a few calls and someone at Google manipulated the algorithm.
Yeah, you know,
my SEO the internet.
I wish.
Talk about an N.
If only.
Her SEO score is like 12,000.
I would so much rather I don't care about my SEO score. I want my TikTok videos to go viral. That's what I want.
yeah, TikTok.
John's a TikTok pro. What were you doing? Some kind of weird videos?
You're gonna, no, that's my OnlyFans. It's my OnlyFans. TikTok, hey, won't let you.
A lot of things on OnlyFans, from what I heard. So
deep cut books after dark.
That's right. After dark. That's right. That's when we get. That's when
John shirtless is going to be.
Oh no! Won't be any of that. Nope. Okay, Deep Cut Books here that we are a Deep Cut Book. So let me ask you a couple of those questions. Like, what is it? Is there stuff from when you were a kid that was like, boom, this just made me a reader? Just this book just grabbed me, and now I can't sleep unless I'm reading before I go to bed at night.
The Giving Tree by Shel Silverstein.
Oh, Shel Silverstein. Oh, bless him. I love him. And R.L. Stein. I didn't read that many Goosebumps, actually. But, okay, I would definitely say I was an avid reader always as a young kid, and my parents really reinforced that. They read aloud. My mom read aloud to me until I was at least in fifth grade, I want to say, fifth or sixth.
Nice.
So I always loved reading and going to the library, but I would say the books that like changed my life as a kid were the Harry Potter books, not to be cliche.
Oh, but, nice.
You know, just
that generation Star Wars.
Yeah. Totally. And J.K. Rowling, like I've read the Harry Potter books, some of them 11 times, you know, mm-hmm. And I haven't reread them in so long. I really want to go back and reread them.
Wow.
Yeah. I'd love to do a middle school series, or like, I always thought I was going to be a fantasy or science fiction writer because of it. And
you never know. You'll get the bug. You just check those genres off.
World building of this second book that I had to do, kind of writing in a dystopian Chicago, was really hard. And I have such an admiration for people that do it because it's like a different, I don't even know. It's a skill. And so I think that's a part of what makes J.K. Rowling just beyond brilliant. I mean, she just created this world that people, I mean, there's amusement parks that were built. So people, you know, same of course with Star Wars too, obviously.
And just millions of new readers, kids who got into it. And I mean, it's life changing and it makes you smarter and interesting, and you learn things. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And every generation, someone like that comes along.
Yep.
Totally. Yeah. Totally.
And if I remember correctly, Harry just came to her. Like, it wasn't like she sat down and was like, I'm going to make up a little boy wizard with a lightning bolt on his head, and we're going to see where this goes. It was, from what I've heard, it's like Harry and Hermione just showed up and were like, hey, let's get working.
I mean, you know, and how she had to write a 7-book series with the kind of, you know, arc of that, and how that went and how it ended, to have, I don't understand how you can see that far ahead. As a, you know, it's the same thing with like George R. R. Martin with like the Game of Thrones books. I'm like, I don't like, what is going on in there?
Mark Greene does 5-book arcs when he bats it out.
I don't understand how they can strategically look that far down the road. Even if you had like a wall of post-its, like I wouldn't be able to do it. I don't know. And I'm not an OCD outliner, but like my outlines for my books will be 30 pages long.
Really?
Yeah, but I'll never look at it again. Once I start typing, I won't look at my outline again. I could not tell you why.
What? I've never heard of that.
I'll break down the chapters into Scrivener with a little prompt. But once the 30 pages of notes are in there, I'm like, let's go. And I don't know how that works.
How, Jeff, do you know how fast Mark Greene writes those books? Like once he
He was saying 2 a year.
He can knock them out.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe if I was in a different life stage, you know, like, because when I talk about how it took me 10 years to write these two, there was a lot of life that happened then, aka like 3 kids and moves and pandemics and work and whatnot. And
so, pandemics.
And life as life goes. And so maybe if I had a different, like, that's why it was really necessary actually for me to quit my job at Google prior to the book coming out, because to go back to your question about the marketing side, it does have to be kind of like a full-time job. I mean, thinking about the network that you have to make and what you have to do to try to get the word out there about your book. And then at the same time, have the creative capacity to like, not only sell your book, but to write the next one. It's like, holy F.
Work, you know? And home and all the other shit that gets in the way.
And even then you still don't make that much money.
No. And that's the thing. If you don't love it, don't bother. Cause there's nothing worse than going to a signing and having a table next to somebody who's all pissed off after an hour because they haven't sold any books. It's like, you're not gonna sell any books. Like, you're here to meet people.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Totally. No one told you at the door. Yeah.
Totally.
There to meet people. Definitely.
It is a passion project for sure.
It is. It really is. It really is. So, it is a long game. It's like a marathon. It truly, truly is. People tell you that, you hear that, but you don't really like understand it until you're in it and you're like, oh, okay. You know, like,
yeah, this is a long-term process. Hopefully. And there's no guarantee of success. It was like, eh, maybe it'll work out.
No, you're right. Like maybe book 10, you know, there's hope.
Yeah, exactly.
But at least so
writing your own lottery ticket.
You can find new readers, you know, each time. So you just really do never know.
Yeah, just take a swing. Write a different genre every time. See what fits. Maybe,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah.
Or you're just ADHD. Like I think that's probably my problem is I just do what seems natural.
We're definitely not selling. I don't know if we're selling the author life real hard here.
It's not for everybody.
Come on, everybody, get on board.
But do you have a timetable for the new order?
So it's coming out April 29th.
Oh, that's duh. We already talked about that.
Yeah.
I'm doing
it. But
great.
Then, you know, for my next project, I don't.
That's what I meant. That's what I was talking about. I wasn't talking about the new order. I was talking about what comes next.
You're going to jump in and start doing the screenplay, right? Because I remember we were talking.
Only.
Yeah, we were at the Carmel Library, and I asked you, you sell the rights to this, and then who do you have in your head about who's going to play for
that me? Was such a good question, Jeff.
Wolf. Yeah.
Yeah, and I said I'm manifesting because it will be, and I, you know, it might still be. No, it will be. I'm still manifesting that.
Yeah. Who you got?
That vibe. Keep that vibe.
Yeah, but I don't know if I would want to do the screenplay. Is that weird?
I can't figure out how to do screenplays. I'm allergic to the format. I've tried.
Yeah, I don't really.
It doesn't make sense to me. You start doing a screenplay, it will improve your narrative writing like you would not believe. Because all of a sudden,
I agree with you.
Oh, I've got to do this. And then you go back to your manuscript and you're like, oh, I can make this so much better if I do this. It's amazing. I know a lot of writers who are doing screenplays now and vice versa, but still.
See, I think when you're doing an outline, you're basically doing the guts of a screenplay just without the little code words that like exterior whatever or you know whatever. That's the part I don't get. Is that like I don't know what this means. Like what's a slug line, like
it'll improve your dialogue. It'll do. Yeah,
I want to start by reading. I want to read. One of my really good friends is a film editor, and she's writing her first screenplay. And I want to start reading some screenplays first. Kind of like
I can tell you what to start with.
Okay,
Wind River by Taylor Sheridan.
I have a copy.
Amazing.
Really?
Amazing. You can download it. You can get it on Google. It's amazing.
I watched it on the screen with the screenplay up at the set, and I followed it. And it deviated a little bit in you know the finished product, but that is a wonderful exercise.
So good.
If you want to learn screenplay stuff.
Yeah. Okay. And you can pull it. I can't remember what database I pulled it from, but I sent you the link.
Claire, I've got a bunch of screenplays I can send you.
I'd love that, please.
All right.
Yeah. So that I've done that trying to figure out how to do this format. And I have a block. I have a genetic block to screenplays.
Well, John, maybe that can be something we try to do together. We take off.
I'm down. Yep. That works.
Ourselves. Yeah. Let's go real slow. In between everything else we have again. What am I talking about? Awesome. I need to like get my next book written.
Yeah, I'm in the third set of rewrites for my voyage into sci-fi that I'm trying.
How's that been going? Have you enjoyed that?
You know what I really like is that I can make up whatever I want. So if I'm writing in this timeline, I kind of got to stick to the physics of the world.
Yeah.
But if I'm writing 200 years from now, I can do whatever I want. So it's been pretty awesome.
Oh, that's
cool. Just making it up as I go.
I feel like your career might help with that. No? I mean, your job?
For
example, the robo-dog we were talking about?
The robo-dog's pretty cool. But I do have robots in my new book. They keep ruining everything. So yeah, it could be the future AI taking over the world.
Oh great. Here we go.
Yeah.
That's true. When you don't have the constraints of our current reality, I feel like that would be super liberating, but at the same time, it can be really intimidating if you kind of think about that blank canvas that you have to work with, you know?
Yeah, a little bit, because I've done I did a fantasy one in the past, and the amount of research I had to do for a medieval fantasy was very constricting, and it was like crazy, like a whole day's, like Circle could have done it, but I had to spend like 8 hours studying horses so that I could write like a 4-page like journey from one castle to a city, just because I had no verb vocabulary for horse terminology. And I was like, that's nuts. Between the hair, the clothes and all that stuff. I was like, get out of here. So with sci-fi, I can just be like, I can make my tapestry, but I can also play with like, what are society's norms today? And what are they 200 years from now? Like what's stuck and what's gone? Like, so it's fun. It's a lot of fun.
Real, that is fun. Yeah. And that is crazy. I remember some historical fiction ish panels at BoucherCon, and they talked about that, about like the extent of the research that you have to do just for like one thing.
Crazy.
Yeah.
It was an experiment. I'm not doing that again. It was too much.
No, but there's some people who I do think like really love that side of it, who like love the history.
Yep. Oh, I loved it. I loved doing it, but it was like so much.
Did you finish
it, John? It's done. Yeah, it was the first one I did independently, published independently. Just Die Hard in a Castle. That's what it is. Die Hard in a Castle.
Oh my God, really?
It was fun. I can send you a copy.
Yeah. I love it.
Yeah.
How many words is it?
That is like 102,000, I think.
Okay,
that was
a
big one.
For...
Yeah, usually I'm between like 80 and 85, but that one went long.
Yeah, but not crazy for fantasy.
No, and in fantasy, like, I don't want to write a 700-page book. Like, that's just, like, I don't know who's got the time for that anymore. So, I like keep it a beach read so people can enjoy it and move on.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. But we have kept you to commute time, so I really appreciate you coming to join us.
We're going to have to cut back a lot of this
one. Oh, no. We don't edit. It's all, even that stupid part where I asked you when your book was coming out, that stays.
Even better. Yeah. Yeah, well, our conversation's so fun. Who would want to miss out on a second of it?
Exactly. That's what we're shooting for. So, but before you go, you got ClaireIsenthal.com, and then you keep it steady on social media. It's Claire at ClaireIsenthal for Twitter and IG.
Yes.
Awesome. And I knew that from heart. I didn't even read my notes.
John and Jeff, do you like, should we do a giveaway?
If you'd like to do a giveaway.
We've never tried.
We've never tried, but we're all for it.
Should we try to do a giveaway? I mean.
I think you absolutely should.
I just got like a whole new boxes of books. And for the second one coming out, let's do it and have some fun.
I think you totally should.
You're the coolest. No one's ever offered that.
Yeah, let's do it.
If you give away one, I'll throw my newest one in there too. So
let's do it. Okay.
How do we do it?
I don't know how we
do it. I don't know.
I thought you guys were the experts.
Okay.
Can we like come
everybody
up with a contest after?
Email John at johnstamp.
Yeah. That could work. You'd be surprised at the amount of people who are really helpful wanting to help me market my book because they've seen it on Amazon. I get emails like that all the time. They're so nice. They're so supportive.
Emails, phone calls, all of it. Texts. Let's table it and then we just kind of like figure it out after when we put the podcast
out. DM the... Ooh, this could go sideways. Okay. But the first 5 people to DM at John Stamp Books or at Claire Isenthal's IG account get free books.
Oh, I like that.
Does that sound good?
Yeah.
Let's okay. At John Stamp Books or at Claire Isenthal.
Yes. And IG. My name, spelling. You can pause it. Can you see it?
There you go.
There.
Don't worry. It'll be on all the marketing.
ISENTHAL.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Nice.
Yeah.
All right. Our first giveaway. Congratulations to all whoever wins.
It's a great idea.
It's good luck. Yeah, we should do that all the time.
Why didn't
we think of this before?
See,
because we didn't have a marketing.
We had the marketing pro on. There you go.
All right. Well, I thank you very much, and I can't wait to talk to you again. So whenever you want to come back on, you have an open invitation.
Oh, thank you both. I love you guys. You guys are awesome. And I have so much fun with you. This is why we do what we do, is because it's not work. It's fun. This part.
The community is the best part. So
it is.
All
it
right.
Really is. All right.
Thank you guys.
Bye guys.
Good night, everybody.
Thanks, everybody.